Okay, welcome to Windows Server 2012, NIC Teaming and SMB Multi-Channel Solutions. Nice mouthful there. And some of you are going to go right away, what on earth are NIC Teaming and SMB Multi-Channel Solutions doing in the same talk? Well, it's really simple. See, I've got a real good friend at Microsoft. He's sitting down here in the front row. Stand up, Jose. Jose owns SMB Multi-Channel and a whole lot of other stuff. And I'm in the networking group. He's in the storage group. In the networking group, I own a couple features. One of them is NIC Teaming. Another one is RDMA. And you know what? Jose is one of my favorite customers for both of them because he delivers products that make great use of both of those. So today we're here to talk about two features. They're going to talk about how we deliver reliability and performance. Okay, let's get started. Reliability is job one. How many of you like unreliable networks? Yeah, right. Okay. We have a couple different ways at different levels in the OS that we deliver that reliability. How many of you think performance is important? A few of you do. Hey, good. See, that was a positive question, not the negative one from before. More hands went up. Both of these also deliver on performance. Again, at different levels in the stack. And in fact, as you're going to hear when we get into Jose's part of this talk, SMB Multi-Channel actually makes use of NIC Teaming when it's available to provide good performance there. So we're going to go through. You guys can read the agenda, and we're going to get through it with some cool demos. Kind of covered this slide already. Reliability. We protect NIC Teaming, networking, right? Boy, better not hit that mic too hard. Okay, we protect against NIC failures, networking failures. What's the most common failure you encounter in the data center today? Sorry?
Hardware?
No. Good try. Sorry? User errors, in a sense, yes. Specifically? Cabling. What cabling? The guy who walks up to that watering closet and goes, oh, nobody's using this port. Humans disconnecting things. Because, in fact, our NICs have become terribly reliable. Our cables rarely fail because they just sit there. They're not being waved around and moved a lot or something. But, in fact, the most common things are either switch misconfigurations, misconfigurations on the host itself, and cables getting unplugged because nobody thought they were being used or that they weren't needed. Both NIC Teaming and SMB provide ways to do a bandwidth aggregation, and we're going to go into that more in detail. How many of you have seen this slide? Well, at least once. You've attended a session in here? Good. We're talking today primarily about the left half of the picture. The beyond virtualization pillar, and the power of many servers, the simplicity of one. And these features are officially assigned into those categories, as noted on the slide. But I would note that both of these features really get used widely, because these features support a lot of other features all the way across the entire bandwidth, or the entire breadth of Windows Server 2012. So let's get into NIC Teaming. What is it? Goes by lots of names, doesn't it? How many of you use NIC Teaming today? How many of you use a third-party NIC Teaming solution? How many of you recommend that third-party NIC Teaming solution to everybody you meet? No? Okay, well, good news is that if you're using NIC Teaming, you're not alone. By our market research, somewhere between 75 and 80% of all servers today, Windows servers today, are running with NIC Teaming enabled, with those third-party solutions. Now, I have good friends at those third parties, and I think some of their solutions are pretty good. But they're not integrated into Windows. Their management isn't integrated well with the rest of Windows management. And so there's some challenges that they face. They also don't always know what features we're rolling out or how to integrate with them. So we're going to get into that. So NIC teaming then is, as you're all apparently aware, because I saw almost everybody's hand goes up, taking two or more NICs, putting them together for the purposes of either failover protection, failure protections, or bandwidth aggregation. Or as one customer asked me when I asked him which one was more important, he said, both. I need both. NIC teaming also has long handled another task because nobody else in the stack did it. And that is, it does the VLAN segregation. How many of you use VLANs in your solutions today? Virtually everybody in the room. And what do you use to give your VLAN segregation? You either use 1Q, you're doing something on the switches, but when it actually hits the hardware of the host, the only way you can get different VLANs pulled apart from a common stream today is NIC teaming, right? You put up multiple interfaces. So here's why I think you should be looking at Microsoft's NIC teaming. We're vendor agnostic. You can build teams with five different vendors' NICs in it, and I don't care whose they are. Realtek, Mellanox, Intel, Broadcom, Chelsea, Emulex. The list goes on, although I'm keeping hard to keep up with who's still in the business these days with the mergers going on. It's fully integrated with Windows Server 2012. Fully integrated. It's part of the stack. It's not some add-in piece of software. It lets you configure your NICs, your teams, the way you need to use them. And we'll go through that more in the demo. It's got a UI based on Server Manager. And I'll be clear, it's not technically part of Server Manager. But we get invoked by Server Manager, and we look just like Server Manager. So if you make the mistake of thinking we are part of Server Manager, the Server Manager guys will be proud. They've actually asked us to come teach them more about how to do this. It's Microsoft supported. How many of you have ever had to call into PSS and been told, turn off NIC teaming? Kind of frustrating, isn't it? Well, hopefully those days are over. And of course, as we're going to look at that in the demo, team management is very easy. We're going to talk about a little bit about vocabulary, because we like to use a common vocabulary. It makes communication a little easier. The things that go in below a team that you're putting together, you probably know those as NICs, network adapters. We call them team members. The things that come out the top, we call team interfaces or team NICs. They're a virtual NIC, right? So sometimes to distinguish them from a Hyper-V VNIC, we'll refer to them as TNICs for team NICs. But they're really just another virtual adapter. They look just like all the other ones. And if you do something like get network adapter, you all are studying PowerShell if you don't already know it, right? Right? Okay, I need to hear that because you gotta know PowerShell. Get network adapter will show up both the team members and the team interfaces. And then, of course, the whole group together is called a team. When we connect things together, well, before I go there, one of the challenges that I hear as I hear people from the field talk about NIC teaming is that they often don't understand what's happening underneath the covers. They pick some mode called smart teaming or something like that, and if you ask them, well, what's it doing? They go, I don't know. That's just what they said to pick. One of the differences with the Microsoft NIC teaming solution is that we actually tell you exactly what we're doing under the covers. We let you configure it by selecting each of the two different phases that a teaming solution goes through. So the first one, the first phase of that is, how do I connect to the switch? There's really only two answers to that. Either I want to connect in a way that the switch doesn't have to know that the NICs are part of a team, or I want to connect in a way that I will configure the switch to be part of managing the team. We call that first one, where the switch doesn't have to know anything, switch independent teaming. We call the second one, where we're dependent on you configuring that switch correctly, switch-dependent teaming. Easy enough terminology, right? Switch-dependent modes come in two versions. One of them has a protocol that runs back and forth between the switch and the host to make sure that both sides are still in agreement over who the team members are. We call that protocol LACP, or Link Aggregation Control Protocol. You've probably seen it in the past labeled something like 802.3AD, draft, or 802.1AX, which is the final name that IEEE used for 802.3AD. We just label it inside of our teaming solution with LACP. That's the name of the protocol it uses. The version that doesn't use the protocol is just called static teaming. So those are the two switch-dependent modes. The other thing that we have to look at then is not just how we hook up to the switch, but how do we use our team members? How are we going to distribute that load? Here we have two basic versions as well. One of them is that we take a look at the address components of the outgoing packets, and we hash them. If you get into PowerShell, you'll see that there are three levels of hashing that we can allow to be turned on. One of them is to hash on the TCP ports and IP addresses together, what we frequently refer to as four-tuple hashing, or TCP ports hashing. The second version is just hashing the IP addresses. This is two-tuple hashing. And those terms come from the TCP IP world. Finally, you might be having something that's running traffic that's not IP. And it's getting rarer these days, but those VMs and those systems still exist. We can still team because we can team based on just the MAC addresses. We can distribute the load by hashing the MAC addresses. And in fact, if packets are coming down through the stack and you've asked for four-tuple hashing, the default, we will actually take that packet, and if it's not TCP or UDP, or if the TCP or UDP layer is hidden from us by something like IPsec, we'll automatically fall down to the two-tuple hashing and look at the IP addresses only. And if that's not available because it's not IP traffic, that's fine. We'll go down and look at the MAC addresses and use that. We automatically fail down that path each time. The other version is Hyper-V port. This is a mode that should only be used under Hyper-V, because if you're using it in native mode, all of native mode consists of one Hyper-V port, and so you're not getting any distribution. This really maps VMs directly to NICs, so that a VM's traffic always gets sent on that particular NIC. The only downside of that is that if you have a VM that needs more bandwidth than one NIC can handle, this isn't going to get you there. But most of the time, VMs don't need more traffic than one NIC can handle. Most of the time, your problem is you've got a lot more VMs than you've got NICs, in which case this is a very good solution. And we'll talk about why a little further. So here's the summary. And I'm going to skip right past this because we're going to come back and look at each of these squares individually in a minute. So one of the questions is, which mode am I using? And if you look down here in the Teams tile in the user interface, you will see that it's listed there. This one says switch independent address hash. And if I right-clicked on that line and clicked properties, I would get this menu on the right-hand side up high. And you can see down in the additional properties, address hash, switch independent. But of course, I can also go to PowerShell and just say get netlbfo team. It gives me back the team. And the fourth thing in there is teaming mode. And the fifth thing in there is load balancing algorithm. And that tells me the same thing. Switch independent, transport ports. Well, wait a minute, those said address hash. Yes, but remember I told you address hash actually has three varieties. We default to transport ports as the address hash that we use. So what do I want to use? If I select switch independent address hash, I will distribute all of the outgoing traffic across all of my available NICs. That's all of the NICs that are in active state. However, because inbound traffic coming in through a router, all the traffic from that coming through that router is going to a single IP address. And that IP address is going to be mapped by that router to a single MAC address. So all of the inbound traffic is going to come in destined for one single MAC address. So I might have 6 members in my team. I'll use all 6 of them going out, but I'm only going to use 1 of them coming in. If I have an application like an IIS server that's getting web clicks in and dumping files out, that works great. But if my bandwidth is balanced, this might not work quite as well. Although, quite frankly, if I'm teaming a couple of 10 gig NICs, and I'm using them both going out and only 1 coming in, that might be still enough bandwidth for you. The advantage here, of course, is I don't have to do any configuration on my switch because I'm switch independent. There are a couple other times when this mode is very useful. How many of you ever use active standby or active passive teaming? I'll ask you why later. You could explain it to me. I've not figured that one out. But it is very common. 30 to 40% of the sites that we've looked at use this mode. Sometimes it's because they've told me it's the only mode they can make work. But in any case, it does get used. And if that's your preferred mode of operation, switch independent, address hash, active standby is a very useful, good solution. If you're doing teaming in the guest, have you guys ever tried teaming virtual adapters in the guest? You can do that. Make sure that each of the virtual adapters is connected to a different external switch, but then you can do teaming there. In the case that, for example, you're running SRIOV, you're familiar with that technology? Am I using acronyms that you haven't heard? Okay, SRIOV is something that Bob Combs, who's standing in the back, raise your hand, Bob, so they can see who you are. Questions about SRIOV, talk to Bob after this. Okay? SRIOV is a technology that allows us to map ports off of the NIC's internal switch directly into a VM. It doesn't pass through the stack on the host at all. It's just direct placement of the data into the VM. And the challenge is, anytime we've got data that's passing directly from the NIC to a VM and not passing through the host stack, NIC teaming and the host can't look at that. We can't do anything with it. We can't even detect it's not there anymore. We can't distribute it. So when we're running SRIOV, a new technology in Windows Server 2012, that data is going up to the VM, so I might have a Hyper-V switch on each of 2 SRIOV NICs, for example, and have placement from that SRIOV NIC directly into the VM, one from each switch, one from each NIC. And then I could team them in the guest so that if one of those NICs failed, I'm still alive. I might run it active standby. I might run it active-active. It doesn't matter. But I have the ability, even with technologies like SRIOV, to directly do the teaming and keep running when NIC failures occur. Okay. Switch independent Hyper-V port. This actually is one of my favorite modes because this gets rid of the problem that we have with the switch independent address hash. Because in switch independent Hyper-V port mode, all of the traffic from each VM, including the ARPs, is going out on the NIC that the traffic from that VM goes on. So that the external switch is seeing the IP address to MAC address mapping show up on different ports. And it's consistent until such time as a failure occurs and we remap, so that the inbound traffic for that VM comes in on the same NIC that the outbound traffic is going out on. The result is we get full utilization of the bandwidth going out and full utilization of the bandwidth coming in, and we haven't had to do any configuration of a switch. When is this useful? Well, Hyper-V port mode, again, because of it does limit each VM to the bandwidth of one NIC, primarily should be used when you have a good number of more VMs than you have NICs. and you can live with that restriction that a VM doesn't get more than 1 NIC's worth of bandwidth. Okay, switch-dependent address hash. Switch-dependent means that you've configured something on the other side. And I'm just using this generically because this is true whether it's LACP or static mode. It doesn't matter. So switch-independent mode, we're going to distribute the traffic outbound just like we did in the switch-independent address hash mode. Switch-dependent address hash, we're going to distribute the traffic outbound based on our hashing of the address components. We're going to use all the bandwidth going out across all the NICs. But in switch-dependent modes, we don't control what comes back in. The switch does. The switch decides how to distribute the inbound traffic. And I don't know how you configure your switches, whether or not you have options even to tell them that you want it sorted by different mechanisms. Most of them just do it however they choose. And so the downside of this is that the inbound traffic has no correlation to the outbound traffic. In the switch independent Hyper-V port mode, you recall, the inbound traffic was correlated to the outbound traffic, which also allowed us to make greater use of VMQs, because we know where that inbound traffic's destined for. Here, we can't. So our performance will be a little bit less in terms of our ability to handle that inbound traffic with VMQs because we can't predict where the inbound traffic is. So what's it good for? You want native teaming with maximum performance, inbound and outbound? There you go. That will give it to you. Or if you're teaming under Hyper-V and you can't tolerate the limit of one VM to one NIC's bandwidth limitation, if you can't tolerate that limitation, this is your alternative to get maximum performance. Okay, the last one, switch-dependent Hyper-V port. Just like all the others, we're going to send out from the host distributing the traffic, and just like the other Hyper-V port mode, we always, in Hyper-V port mode, we're going to distribute the outbound traffic based on the ports on the Hyper-V switch, which really roughly equates to based on each VM. So as we're going to be sending out the traffic by distributing each VM to a different NIC. But because the inbound traffic in switch-dependent modes is determined by the switch side, we again have no correlation of inbound to outbound, or outbound to inbound. So this one is a good mode. It's not the optimum mode most of the time. It's best used if Hyper-V teaming is in use, that is, Hyper-V is in use, the VMs do exceed the number of ports, and you've got a policy in place that says you must use switch-dependent teaming. Under normal conditions, all else being equal, no policies in place, the world being a perfect location, under Hyper-V, most of the time, you probably will want to run switch-independent Hyper-V port mode. In native cases, in native servers, most of the time, you're likely to want to run switch-dependent address hash, unless you have a policy that says, I can't tolerate a switch failure, in which case you need to get switch independent so you have that route diversity. All right? I think I beat that one to death. Sorry? No, we'll get to the limitations in a minute. We don't team teams. Team interfaces. We talked earlier about using VLANs. And one of the things that many people use their NIC teaming solutions for today is to put up virtual NICs, each one correlated to a specific VLAN. We can do that too. It's easy to do. We'll actually show you in a minute how to get there in the demo. The far left figure shows that you can have a default mode, Team Nick, and I didn't get into that. I should explain that. What's a default mode team interface? It's an interface that passes all traffic up through that interface except traffic which explicitly matches the VLAN of another team interface. So if I'm configured like I am on the far left figure, where I have a default mode interface and a VLAN 42 interface, all the traffic for VLAN 42 is going to go up that VLAN 42 team interface. All the rest of the traffic is going to go up the default interface. If I am like I am in the middle there, I have one for VLAN 42 and one for VLAN 99. Any traffic that comes in that's tagged with VLAN 42 is going to go up the VLAN 42 interface. Any traffic coming in tagged with VLAN 99 is going to go up the VLAN 99 interface. Any other traffic is going to go in the black hole. It'll be dropped. Because I have nothing to match it, and no catch-all, no default. If I'm running Hyper-V, please, please, please do all your VLAN tagging and filtering on the Hyper-V switch. This is the only supported configuration for Hyper-V. If you take the left side configuration and put Hyper-V on top of that default TNIC and pull off VLAN 42 to your management OS, the problem is you're going to run into is this. Somebody's going to come along and put a VM on that switch and mark that VM as being VLAN 42. And you are going to spend 2 weeks trying to debug why on earth you can't get any traffic into that VM. And you'll see all the outbound traffic show up on the wire and all the traffic coming back in on the wire, and it's not arriving at the VM. Why not? Because you have another port there, VLAN 42, and it's pulling it off. Okay? So if you're using Hyper-V, don't create another team interface with a VLAN-specific interface. If you do, it's not supported. We won't stop you from doing it. And be prepared to spend some time debugging your system. When we first create a team interface, we create what we call the primary team interface. You create the team, we automatically create a team interface for that team. By default, we name it with the name of the team. They can be renamed. You can rename that interface to anything you want to. So if I create the interface and I call the team Team 1, and I get the team interface that shows up in GetNet Adapter as Team 1, and I go into GetNet Adapter or I go into the network control panel or someplace like that, and I go in and change Team 1 to Demo. And then I go to delete the team, and I say, delete NetLBFO team demo. Guess what? Demo is not the name of the team. Renaming the team interface does not rename the team. It only renames the team interface. So be careful. Make sure you understand what you're doing. Only that first one that we create can be put in default mode, in that catch-all mode. Only that first one. And that first one that we create cannot get deleted until you delete the team. Any other team interface you create, you can go in and delete. But you can't delete the one that's created with the team until you delete the team. And when you delete the team, it too will go away. Creating additional ones, we'll go through this in the demo. It's very simple. After you've got the team up, you can go in and add NetLBFO team NIC and add yourself one, just minus VLAN 99 or whatever VLAN you want, and it will automatically create one, and it will name it by default as the team name hyphen VLAN and the VLAN number. So as you can quickly see, here's my interface for VLAN 99. You can do it with PowerShell, you can do it through the UI. It's very quick and easy to do it. We've already noted that Hyper-V violation. Don't break it. A team of one. Why would you ever have a team of one? Sorry? You're splitting off VLANs. You're not worried about reliability, you're worried about VLAN filtering. There are times when people will do this. I suspect for most of you, this is not a high runner case. It's possible to do it. That's enough said. Of course, it does not protect you against any failures. Who can be a team member? Any NIC, any Ethernet NIC of any speed that passes Windows Logo. Well, why does it have to pass Windows Logo? Well, we want to make sure that your team members have some opportunity to stand up on their own. And there are some things that Windows Logo requires NICs to implement that we expect to be there when we want to create the team and to use them in the team. One of those is the ability to be put into promiscuous mode, that is, the ability to pass all traffic. Because we want to do the filtering in the NIC teaming or Hyper-V layers and not in the NIC. So we expect the NIC to pass in all traffic. So since I mentioned only Ethernet adapters, I often get a question, well, what about teaming wireless? What about teaming InfiniBand? These are great technologies, and you know, I would love to see an ability to team those things. One of the things that's a little bit of a challenge in teaming different technologies is that teams are a layer two concept. And they share a common interface up to the TCP/IP stack at the top, which means you get one IP address on the top. So that IP address has to be legitimate on each of the routes underneath. So if your interfaces are not a part of the same subnet, you could get really messed up by putting those in the same team. By the way, that's also true of Ethernet NICs. If you do a switch independent connection and you put a connection to two different subnets, don't expect it to work. All right? Teams of teams, not supported. What's a team of team? There are a few people out there, and since the question came up, let me just walk through it. There are a few people out there who like to build two LACP teams. And then take those two LACP teams and make them a team in an active standby mode. So maybe I put 4 1-gig NICs in one LACP team and 4 1-gig NICs in the other LACP team, and then I fail 4 gigabit to 4 gigabit links. When we queried customers, we discovered that there were very, very few customers interested in that. There are some. I think we can find ways to help you out. If you find a customer that really, really wants that, we can help you explain other ways to get what they're looking for once we really understand what it is they're trying to get. Team members can be active or standby. We talked a little bit about that earlier. Teaming in the VM, we've talked about that. Again, teams of two are supported. We don't stop you from adding more VNICs to the team, but teams of two are supported, one to each of two separate external switches. It's intended and optimized for use with SRIOV, but it will work whether SRIOV is there or not. And in fact, if you've got two teams underneath and you want to team ports off of those two switches, you know, two teams each going to their own Hyper-V switch, and you've got ports from each of those Hyper-V switches into your VM, and you want a team in the VM, go ahead. That would be called hyper-redundancy. There is one little caveat. If you try to team an interface and it's not connected to an external switch, it will have been showing that everything was fine and wonderful until you put it in the team, and now it will show it's failed. And it will stay failed. And that's because we detect that you've tried to team something that's not on an external switch, and we shut it down. The second part is you have to explicitly allow NIC teaming to happen in a VM. So when you go in, you add a NIC in Hyper-V Manager, you add a NIC to that VM, click on the little arrow on the side and go down. There's an Advanced Properties tab, tag that little Advanced Properties tag. go on, scroll on down all the way to the bottom on the right, and down at the bottom will say, allow NIC teaming. Click that for each NIC that you plan to make part of a team in the VM. Otherwise, failover will not succeed. Manageability. How many of you have played around with the NIC teaming UI in beta? It's almost there. You'll recognize the new one. It's even better. Okay, some of you are going, oh, better than that? Wow, okay, yeah, it's even better. The PowerShell has not changed from beta. It's still just as powerful, just as easy to use. And you can do everything you need to do through PowerShell. And in fact, the UI, just as the beta UI did, the RC RTM UI is 100% built on top of PowerShell. It does everything it does through PowerShell. So if you see it do something, know that you could script that if you wanted to. And of course, the coolest thing is it does it remotely. You can set up on a client through the remote server administration tools. You can run the NIC teaming UI on a client machine and manage your servers that are running core with a full UI to do it with. Features. This comes up all the time. Well, what features does it work with? It's part of the stack. It works with everything. Okay, not quite everything. I mentioned earlier when I mentioned SRIOV that NIC teaming has a hard time handling packets it can't see. We have two technologies in Windows Server 2012 where the packets bypass the stack. One of those is SRIOV, and for that we have teaming in the guest. The other one is one of Jose's favorite technologies, that's RDMA. RDMA is a direct offload from the top of the TCP stack direct to the NIC. We don't see it in the stack, so we can't team it. Other than that, oh, and TCP chimney offload, again, it's a full offload to the NIC, so we can't team it. Other than that, all the features are there, and we support them. Okay, limits, 32 NICs, 32 team interfaces, 32 teams in a server. You may not be able to do all maximums at the same time. Interested in a demo? Got to figure out how we get back to that here. There we go. Okay, server manager, most of you are familiar with this screen, right? If I click on the NIC teaming disabled, I get the local thing. I can come up, I could add more servers to this, so I could manage them all from here. But just to show you how easy it is to create this team, we'll come down here, we select one, we'll multi-select a second one, add a new team, team name demo. We could come down here and select some different properties. What should our teaming mode be? What should our load balancing mode be? Do we need a standby adapter? Okay, we'll pick one and make it a standby adapter. Then we click OK. And in a very short time, we have ourselves a team. All set up, switch independent, address hash, two adapters, one active, one standby. If I go in and something happens to my active NIC, instantly my standby is active. If my disabled NIC comes back, it takes a moment to make sure that everything is up and the switch it's talking to is safe, and it returns it to active status, and the one that was on standby goes back to standby. Well, this is a remote desktop to this. How are we doing without getting booted? We actually have fast recovery, but we also have another link into the server. Yes, and that'll happen if you're doing it over RDP. If you're doing it by remote management, you don't. Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry, repeating the question. How did I do this without getting booted off the server? Well, the answer is I'm not talking to the server on the 10 gig NICs. You notice there's a 1 gig NIC in there too. That's how. Okay? Because otherwise, exactly what you described happens. If I tie to team a NIC that I'm actively using for an RDP session, yes, I'm going to lose connectivity. It'll take it a few seconds to recover. It will recover. So how hard is it then to change the properties of NIC? I could come in, I could change the team name. I could change who the members are. I can completely reconfigure the team. I can redo all the additional properties. I can say we don't want anybody standby anymore. And say OK. And we're back to active instantly. And then, of course, to make this all go away, I can bring PowerShell up. Yep, I'll get there. Typing is not my strong point some days. Fortunately, we have autocomplete. Well, usually we do. Is it? There we go. Oh, that's because I didn't put the team name in there. Yes. And confirm it. And it's gone. And if I look back at the UI, it's gone. So, all right. Jose is going to come up and talk to you about multi-channel.
Hello. All right. Cool. So I'm not sure how many of you were in the previous session about SMB. We're going to give you a little bit more detail on SMB multi-channel, which, again, it's kind of interesting. If you look at what is it for, you will see that it's very similar to what we're talking about in NIC teaming, right? So we're providing network fault tolerance, and we are providing bandwidth aggregation, okay? So the idea here is if you have 2 1-gig NICs, you get 2 gig bandwidth. If you have 2 1-gig NICs working fine and you lose one, you now can continue to work transparently without the ability, without any disruption to your workload's ability to do networking. We actually look really deep into LBFO, and we can, in many situations, live entirely off LBFO in many workloads. But for SMB specifically, we had a few additional needs, so we decided to build a feature at a higher layer that actually is very similar to what we're doing with NIC teaming. And the reason why we got the two talks together here is to actually explain to you when would you use one, when would you use the other, and when would you use them together. Okay? So let me describe what we can do in general terms. So you can, essentially, if you have an SMB client, a file client, talking to an SMB file server, we will exchange information about our network configuration, and SMB will automatically create multiple connections. And if we have these multiple connections across different interfaces, we're kind of achieving the same goal that NIC teaming is achieving. However, there are specific situations where we don't really need that ability that NIC teaming provides, but we need some extra capabilities. For instance, if you have a single 10-gig NIC, what can many times happen is SMB, in the days before Windows Server 2012, talking through a 10-gig NIC would create a single TCP connection, which is great. But the problem is, the way we have Windows architected in the networking side makes it that when we create that single TCP connection, it will actually affinitize with a core. And in the world where we have machines of 16, 32, 64, many more cores, having that single core pegging, trying to transmit 10 gig could happen, especially with small I/O. We have optimized the stack a lot, but it's still possible to make that happen. If you think about 40 gig, 100 gig in the future, if we don't have a solution for this problem, we'll certainly peg that single core, because the machines are not getting faster per core, they're actually getting many more cores. So one of the things that multi-channel does for us is on a single 10 gig NIC, we will create multiple connections. And with that, we allow the stack to distribute those connections across different cores. That's one thing. The other thing is that, as Don mentioned, we do RDMA now in SMB, with SMB Direct. But we can't team RDMA interfaces. So how are you going to do it? You're not going to have fault tolerance of RDMA? No. We actually use a higher level construct where SMB is creating those connections, and we detect the configuration. And for RDMA, you will always use SMB multi-channel to provide your bandwidth aggregation and your network fault tolerance, not LBFO, okay? And not NIC teaming. Let me go into a few of those scenarios. So first one I described, an RSS-capable interface. It could be 10 gig, could be faster, could be a 1 gig NIC. And what we're doing here is when you have RSS in the system, that is a capability in the network stack called receive-side scaling that allows us to actually engage multiple cores if you have multiple TCP connections. And now, when SMB sees that capability in the NIC, we actually talk to the networking stack, say, hey, does this NIC have an RSS capability? If it does, SMB will automatically, in addition to the initial connection it created, create additional connections. What that does, it gives the stack the ability to spread that workload across the multiple cores. So what you have is the ability to better leverage your network capability without pegging a single core. Okay? By default, we use 4 connections per RSS-capable interface. That is a configurable parameter. Okay? Yes? No, no. The question is, what are you using to do this? So the SMB client talks to the SMB server. When it talks to the SMB server through the SMB protocol, it will query, are you SMB 3.0? If it is SMB 3.0, which is the version that is introduced in Windows Server 2012, it will say, can you give me a list of your network interfaces? So if it matches the client and server interfaces, do we have RSS here? If we do, it will automatically, in addition to the original connection that was created, will create additional connections to that server. Automatically. There is no requirement other than the ability for the NIC to have RSS. And we actually don't do anything with RSS. We just know that when RSS is present, it is beneficial to create additional connections. If you create additional connections and there is no RSS, then you're really not doing much more than creating overhead. Right? So that's the idea. So it's very simple. Jose, do I need to enable this? No. Multi-channel is on by default. Right? The other scenario is when you have multiple network interfaces. Question? Question is, are we NUMA aware? Yes, there are optimizations in SMB now that we are actually NUMA aware. There's more to be said there, of course, but it would probably go too deep. But be aware that when we are doing this, we are aware of how traffic is coming in and out. That's especially important when we're doing RDMA at the high rates of speed that we do sometimes. Okay, so one of the things we are doing when we have multiple network interfaces, this will look a lot like what we're describing with NIC teaming. You have multiple NICs, we actually detect the fact that there are multiple NICs, and we will create multiple connections on each interface, right? If interfaces are RSS capable, we'll do more than one per interface. If the interfaces are not RSS capable, we'll create one per interface. Goal here now is to actually aggregate bandwidth and also to give you fault tolerance. So if you lose one NIC, SMB will automatically take the queue that was on that NIC, move it over to the other side, transparently keep going, while your workload never sees any change. Of course, this is assuming that you are using SMB as your only kind of traffic, right? If you have other kinds of traffic, of course, SMB multi-channel will not help you there. In that case, you absolutely want to have NIC teaming in place because that's what will help you with that. There are other technologies that have similar capabilities. Maybe, for instance, if you're using iSCSI with multiple connections per session, you might be able to achieve something similar. But we are very proud of the way that SMB multi-channel actually detects the configuration and automatically engages, right? So if we see multiple NICs, we will create the multiple connections. There are restrictions. We'll only do that for NICs of the same type and same speed. So if you have multiple 10 gigs, we'll team those. If you have two 10 gigs and one gig, we'll team the two 10 gigs because they're faster, right? If you have two RDMA interfaces and two non-RDMA interfaces, we'll prefer the RDMA's one. And we'll group them like that together, okay? And you might want to ask about performance. And we tested this, and we support, multiple NICs of different multiple configurations. Like we tried, a few folks tried 6, 8, 1 gig NICs. Some people tried 2, 3, 4, 10 gig NICs. We don't have any specific restriction. It's just a test thing that we support up to 8. And in this case here, we have a solution where we created four network interfaces on each side. They're all 10 gig NICs. And of course, they were RSS capable. So in that configuration specifically, we were creating multiple connections per NIC and achieving what gets very close to line rate up to starting from about 32 to 64K IOs. We're doing this. This is with the developer preview. Spencer, who was here and left, he's working on getting that updated for the RC. We believe we are actually achieving line rate with smaller IOs, because the smaller the IO, the more challenging it is to do our distribution, get it across the wire. But we're achieving very good throughput. And this is with traditional 10 gig interfaces. These are not RDMA interfaces, just regular 10 gig NICs, okay? Now, another thing that you might think, oh, but what if I team? Well, teaming is great, and we love the fact that it can actually integrate really deep with the switch. We don't do that. We actually just create additional TCP connections, and we hope that the stack will do what it does best. But if you can have the assistance of teaming, that's a great thing. We notice that we'll detect failure faster, especially if it's on the server side. We will actually react more quickly if teaming is in place. So we always recommend teaming if you can. Now, what happens if you don't have multi-channel? Let's say, oh, I disable multi-channel, I'm using teaming. Well, what's going to happen is because you're not doing multi-channel, you're going to have a single TCP connection over the team. And you will not give a chance for the configuration to actually leverage the full throughput. So we're talking about if you have address hash, the port mode, right? You could potentially spread across the multiple NICs if you have multiple connections, and you could actually get added throughput. But if SMB only creates one connection, that would never happen because you're limited by the one, and the one has to go in one of the NICs. It can't go in both, right? So what we do, if you enable multi-channel, we detect that you have a team. So we look at the property of the interface. Oh, a team. So we should be able to benefit from creating multiple connections. And we will create multiple connections over the team. And if you have the proper type of teaming that allows for aggregation, it will have the opportunity to be effective, right? Of course, if you have one of those teaming types that doesn't allow you to do that, and then it obviously won't happen. And SMB doesn't know about it. All we know is there's a team, so there might be a chance that we will achieve greater throughput, so we create more TCP connections, right? But keep in mind that SMB will be aware of this and will try to give the stack the opportunity to do it. Now, probably the most interesting case that we have is RDMA. RDMA is when you have multiple RDMA-capable interfaces. We actually, in order to start using RDMA, we rely on multi-channel to detect that we have those kind of NICs. And that's only with multi-channel enabled that you are going to switch from using TCP to using RDMA. So the way the negotiation goes is we establish a connection to the file server. File server says, hey, I'm SMB 3.0. I can do multi-channel. Then the client sends a packet saying, oh, you can do multi-channel? Give me a list of your interfaces. Client gets the list. If it sees RDMA-capable interfaces on both sides, they say, oh, an opportunity to move to RDMA. So we will actually stop using TCP, and we will start an RDMA connection of whatever kind is available. And if we succeed, we're going to switch entirely to RDMA. And what happens is you see, if you're trying to do like a NetMon trace to see what the traffic is like, you're going to see, oh, here's a negotiation packet, here's an exchange of interfaces, and then silence. Because we go entirely RDMA, right? And as Don was mentioning, we completely bypass the stack, and we let the NICs talk and do very fast exchanges of direct memory, through direct memory access, right? And that's how we achieve very, very fast throughputs with SMB. We're talking multiple gigabyte per second out of single ports of a NIC. So it's very interesting technologies that is readily available at 10 gig, 32 gig, 54 gig per port, right? And we have several demos showing that here. I'm going to show one too. So what happens when you do have multi-channel? You engage through these special RDMA interfaces. We keep the TCP connection up just in case we have failures because we fall back to them. So this is also for fault tolerance. And if you have multiple RDMA interfaces, we'll engage them. In that case, we do not recommend NIC teaming. So if you have RDMA interfaces and you team the RDMA interfaces, the team is not RDMA capable. Why? Because there's a layer between us and the NIC. And RDMA relies on the fact that we talk straight up to the NIC and we send memory registrations, requests for data movement straight down the NIC path. If teaming is in the middle, you're actually going to just use TCP/IP and you lose the RDMA capability. So for those, we recommend that you don't team, but instead let multi-channel provide you the fault tolerance and the bandwidth aggregation. Okay? Things that don't work. Okay, so there's stuff that we don't do. So if you only have one NIC on each side, and that NIC is not RSS capable, not RDMA capable, then we don't have any benefit in creating additional connections, then we won't. If you have NICs of different type or different speed, we won't actually create multiple connections at the same time. So if you have a 10 gig RDMA NIC and a 10 gig non-RDMA NIC, we'll use only the RDMA one, okay? There's nothing really stopping us from doing it. It's that our load balancing algorithms are very simple, and we rely on the fact that the NICs are of similar type and speed, okay? We might actually, in the future, think about that. Let us know what you think of having to have this constraint of same type and speed. And we don't do wireless. We do fail back from wireless, but we don't team multiple wireless interfaces. Okay. A little table to help you select the technology that you can use. So if you have NICs with a single NIC with no RSS, we can't help you. I'm very sorry, right? We'll just create the one, and that's it. That's how you live. Now, if you have multiple NICs and they are not RSS capable, we can help you. We can create one connection per interface, and that'll be helpful. Now, what would be even better is if you use teaming on those two 1-gig NICs, and then we put multi-channel on top. Why? Because in that case, you get the added benefits of teaming, like the ability to detect the failure and all the flexibility of the different types of teams that we saw here. But you also have multiple connections over that, giving the stack the ability to actually achieve. In this case, for instance, let's say there are 2 1-gig NICs. You can achieve 2-gig throughput, depending on the mode of teaming that you choose. Okay. The multiple NICs, with RSS, we will do multiple connections per NIC. There is an advantage of doing that even for a single NIC for performance, but obviously if you only have one NIC, you don't get any fault tolerance. If you have multiple RSS-capable NICs, we will use them both. And again, if they're not RDMA, we suggest that you team and then use multi-channel on top, okay? What happens if you don't? And that comes up a lot, right? What if I don't team and just do multi-channel? Well, that's great for SMB. We will probably get very close in terms of perf, but then for all your other workloads, you don't have the aggregation and you don't have the network fault tolerance. So you might want to think real hard about that one, okay? And with RDMA, absolutely every time enable multi-channel and do not team, because if you team, you lose the RDMA capability, okay? So at this stage in Windows Server 2012, we are the only, SMB is the only workload that leverages kernel mode RDMA. So the networking team built the feature essentially for us to use, and we're very thankful. But there are no other workloads that leverage that in this release. There are other workloads that leverage through us. So for instance, clustering does internode communication between nodes using RDMA, but they actually create SMB connections between nodes to do that. So in the end, it's actually through SMB that they achieve that, okay? So I hope that helped. I know there are different solutions there. And the main thing about these different configurations, we want to give you the most functionality, but some of these features have interactions, and we want you to understand them, okay? Last but not least, how to troubleshoot. So our configuration is done simply by configuring the NICs. SMB detects the configuration and will engage when it finds NICs of same types and speed. We have commandlets to actually help you understand what we see and what decisions we made. So what we see is on get SMB server network interface and SMB client network interface, and what we actually engage is in the get SMB multi-channel connection, okay? We also have event logs, and we also have performance counters to help you do that. So let's do a little demo. So I have a simple demo here where this is a Hyper-V over SMB setup where I have a Hyper-V VM running, and we have Hyper-V storing the VHD files on a remote file share, and we are using RDMA. We actually have multiple RDMA interfaces in this system. So you can see I have my RDMA 1 and RDMA 2. I have other NICs as well. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to start a little workload inside the VM. And what you're going to see is that I have the workload is running here, so I have a certain level of performance. And what I'm trying to do here is show you the different NICs being used. So this is one NIC. This is the other NIC. See? So in order to achieve this throughput of 2.5 gigabytes a second, in this case, I am actually using these two NICs. The unit of scale here is actually number of frames per second that I'm transmitting, right? But you see that both NICs are engaged. It's not a perfect load balancing algorithm. We don't actually do one then the other. We actually do a shortest queue first algorithm. So we look at the two paths that we have. We try to place the packets in optical order, or in optimal order. Optical if the cables are optical. And if you see that you have enough bandwidth, we'll just start engaging both of them at the same time. And if you lose one, it will just use the one that survived the failure. So what I wanted to kind of show here, I probably should adjust this scale. So what I'm going to do next, I'm going to disable one of my network interfaces. On a regular system where you don't have these protections, you probably shouldn't do that, right? But I can do that. Oh, and before I do, let me show you a little bit on my connection. So I'm use get SMB multi-channel connection. You see that to this server called TFS, that's where my server is, I have right now two connections. So this is the first one, this is the second one. and it's saying RDMA true. So I'm doing RDMA connections, okay? So what I'm going to do next here is I'm going to go over and I'm going to disable one of my RDMA interfaces. So what's going to happen is, as you would expect, one of the NICs is going to be disabled, and the other one is going to take over, right? So what you're seeing here, and this is RDMA traffic, so this counter, the performance counter I'm seeing is number of RDMA frames per second. So I actually see that because I lost one of my NICs, the other one has to make up for it. But because I actually am using 54 gig InfiniBand, I can do the 2.5 gig a second, which is about, how much is that in gigabits? Times 8?
20.
20, right? Is that right? Are you doing the math? Okay, so I can do 20 out of a single port, right? In fact, I could do more. I think we can do about 6 out of this one port, 6 gigabytes a second, right? It's not bad. And then I can actually re-enable, which is also interesting, I can actually re-enable the NIC. So I'm going to quickly go over here, see if I can catch it in the act. See, it's trying to reconnect. You see some authentication traffic, but it's already trying to engage. And as we do, you will see that the NIC traffic drops back to the same level. Now, I lost the other counter because the NIC went away and came back, so performance monitor won't show the other one coming back. But believe me, the other half is engaged there. So this is a simple demo, but what I'm trying to showcase here is that we have the ability to, first of all, have in the SMB layer that protection for network against network failure. We can do the aggregation. And if you combine this with teaming, in the scenarios where teaming is supported, it is a beneficial combination of the two roles. But there are a couple of scenarios, especially single RSS-capable NICs and RDMA NICs, single or multiple NICs, where it's very beneficial to have multi-channel by itself, even though you can't benefit from teaming in that scenario. So we were trying to basically give you this whole idea of how this new networking stack works. One of the things that we hear a lot from folks is multi-channel is interesting. It's self-configured. Now, there are situations where people prefer to actually configure things. We have also commandlets to set restrictions to multi-channel, so it goes to specific network interfaces if you're interested in doing that. And we have in the booth over there at the Technical Learning Center, this system is where it's running over there. We have a few different demonstrations with different types of NICs, RDMA NICs, 10 gig NICs, and regular NICs, so you can see how that all plays out. So welcome to come join us over there and get more details about this feature. Any questions? Cool. Thanks for staying with us.